I'm joined in the studio by Sheila Bowman. She's the Manager for Culinary and Strategic Partnerships for the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch Program. Sheila, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Hari Pulapaka. He is the Executive Chef at Crest Restaurant in DeLand. Hari, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, Sheila, I want to start with you. What's the goal of the Seafood Watch Program?
The Seafood Watch Program is part of the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and what we do is create science-based recommendations based on the impacts on the environment of the fish that we're eating, how we're catching them, how we're farming them. We put that all into a single recommendation that consumers and chefs like Hari can use when they're purchasing seafood.
Do you think most people who go to an aquarium have they're kind of primed to be sympathetic to the idea of sustainable fisheries and kind of taking care of the environment, or are they just there to see some cool fish?
We get both of those folks, and there's usually one person in the party that's the real ocean lover, has a real favorite fish, or they love the otters or love turtles. So usually in each family, there's one person that's pretty fanatic. But most people, I think, have a affinity for the ocean. There's a lot of folks that head out to the oceans, head to the coast for vacations. There's a lot of people who really value our oceans and what kind of relaxation and resources, food, seafood that we get out of the oceans.
Mm-hmm. Hari, how much does fish play a part in the food you cook?
Fish is a seafood in general is a huge part of what I cook in the sense that it's easily the most ordered dish or set of dishes on our menu. It's what I like to eat on my day off if I'm able to get some really well-prepared fish. So I naturally gravitate towards dishes that showcase the bounty of our oceans near and far.
When you say near and far, is there a good spread of fish available here in Central Florida?
The bounty around where we live, the state of Florida, is, of course, enormous. And with that comes the responsibility for chefs like me to make sure that that bounty is not tampered for future generations. So that's where the idea of sustainability, you know, is important and integral to what I do.
Sheila, what are some of the challenges facing fisheries, not just the kind of popular fish that people eat, but just the oceans in general? And how important is a program like this to try and steer people towards a more sustainable mindset?
Well, I think when people think about the oceans, they may not think about overfishing as such a big challenge. They may think about oil spills and plastic pollution. Certainly those are things that are facing the oceans and creating challenges. I think one of the things that's important to add to that is the idea of overfishing, that we are taking and have been for the last half century taking enormous amounts of fish out of the ocean. So it's really important that we think about how we're doing that, the numbers of fish we're taking. Are we using gear that's destroying habitats? Are we catching other species that we don't intend or don't want to eat? Why don't we want to eat those? I think that's a question that a lot of chefs are asking these days. So most people, when they look at the oceans, don't necessarily think about that. So it's important, I think, to kind of add it to your list of things that you think about as you're in the grocery store and in the restaurants. It's how is the fish coming to us? How is it being farmed? How is it being fished?
When we were talking before we came on air, you were describing a kind of a pyramid, if you will, of fish and the popular species of fish. I wonder if you could just go through that list quickly.
Absolutely. I think anybody who's listening probably has their favorite fish, and it's probably tuna, shrimp, or salmon are going to rank right in there. That's what we eat both here in the U.S. and globally. Those are the top consumed species. So one of the things I think scientists really know is that no matter how sustainably you do those three species, we can't as a nation or certainly as a planet subsist on those three fish. So it's really an idea that's getting a lot of play right now is eating other species. What is another fish that you might like? And maybe there's something that you've never heard of that you see on a menu that you give a try because it's probably in most cases pretty delicious and really worth spreading our interest in fish, our love of fish, kind of spread it around a little bit so other species are being caught and brought to market.
Is it inevitable that eventually, given population growth and the like, we will end up overfishing certain species no matter how much you try to put some limits in place? I mean, people are talking now about eating insects as kind of a viable alternative to beef and other forms of meat. I wonder if we're heading in that direction with seafood as well.
I think that's certainly kind of the end game kind of thinking, that as the planet has more and more consumers on it, how are we going to feed those people? So we do an institute every year at the aquarium, and we've talked about insects and other proteins, which sounds so strange to us, but there's a lot of places around the world where those are consumed. Algae-based proteins, plant-based proteins. So I do think that the next 50 years here in the U.S., we're going to have to evolve what we think of as kind of your average standard dinner, that it may not be a beef-centered plate, and it may not even be seafood-centered. Maybe more vegetables, insects, algae, something to think about.
Well, Harry, if we're talking about fish, what kind of underappreciated or maybe fish that people haven't heard of, what kind of things are you cooking?
Well, a great example of these things called trash fish dinners around this country. We
trash
like to call,
fish?
Yeah, so I'm not a big fan of that particular verbiage, but it's no knock on the intent and the goal of these events. We like to call our events lesser seafood events. We've done one in the past, but we're going to do one this evening where we're going to feature fish like lionfish, which is a highly predatory and invasive species and off of our coast. And people are looking for ways to, of course, eradicate some parts of that population, but of course, maybe not just kill them, but actually consume them for benefit. So lionfish is an example. We have rudderfish, various kinds of jack, amberjack. We have croaker is an example that we use on these kinds of events. People who live in Florida have grown up with this. They're used to it. It goes by various names on the market. It eats beautifully. It's wonderful for fresh fish and chips in the true style of an English fish and chips. In fact, that's how I prepared it last time at the restaurant. And we also have various types of snappers, not always the big red snapper, lesser snappers, if you will, lesser groupers, if you will. The list is huge, actually. And I'm just a cook at the end of the day, and I'm essentially a mathematician who became a cook. So I'm always trying to learn more about what's going on. I can't even swim. So this is a well-known thing from my friends. I can't even swim. And I've fished maybe twice in my life. So I'm not an expert in all the species of seafood out there. I know how to cook them really well, and I enjoy eating them, and I'm trying to learn as much as I can about them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what are your customers telling you? Do they like eating these trash fish?
It helps that we're a smaller restaurant, so... And we've built, I think, a reputation of trust among our customers and guests in our community. So when I or Jennifer or my sous chefs, get out there and say, hey, this is what we're doing this week, people don't usually ask, what is that or what does that taste like? They usually go, okay, let me see if I can get in. So the trust is very important, and it speaks to what Sheila talks about, which is about how do we get chefs to tell us what to do? And we need our chefs to be trustworthy, and believe it or not, we are. I mean, I talk about this when I go out there and talk about chef advocacy. Is the reason chef advocacy can be extremely powerful is because essentially, when a guest walks into a restaurant, you're telling that restaurant basically whatever comes out of that kitchen prepared by the chef or the cook is something I'm willing to put on my body, and that's an enormous amount of trust that you place in an establishment. Almost as much as you would in a physician. So when we showcase things like lesser seafood, because we're, I think, trustworthy, we should be anyway, I'd like to think I am, that our guests are not worried about that we're going to somehow hurt them with what we're trying to serve. They know that our intent is good, and we're in fact just trying to sometimes just show off what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, talking about trustworthiness, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about black market fishing. If we have... limits in place for, say, salmon or tuna or other species, are people getting around those by devious means?
That's a great question, and I'm happy to say that there's probably less of that going on these days as consumers have become aware and chefs have become aware. There's been a lot more regulation and management that's been successful on even the open seas. So I think there's still issues with some fraud and some problems with transparency, but I think the good news is we're heading in the right direction with that.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things people should be looking out for? I mean, if people are, if you go to a restaurant, you're not sure what to order, some of the stuff looks pretty foreign to you. What sort of things should you be doing if you don't know much about, you want to broaden your palate, but you're not sure how to do it?
Well, I think, Hari just was talking about the fact that his guests come in and they really trust that they're going to have delicious food with him. So, go to your favorite places and look beyond the salmon and the shrimp and the tuna. And there's typically something else on the menu that you can ask about. If there's not, if you have a favorite restaurant and they're not getting out there, I would ask them, you know, why, is there any regional or local seafood that they might want to start moving onto their menu? I think here in Florida, there's a lot of regional fishes and things that we don't even talk about, like croaker in California, that although we do have our own croaker out there, we call it the white sea bass, but you know, ask for these fish. When you see them in the fish market, ask about them. And I think that, as Hari was pointing out, you know, this is where chefs can have some fun. Mm-hmm. A piece of chicken is a piece of chicken, but every fish kind of brings a different challenge into the kitchen. So I think here in Florida, you get good examples of chefs doing probably some of their most creative cooking with some of these different species of fish. So I wouldn't hesitate to give them a try.
Hari, when you talk about trash fish, I'm wondering if some of that comes in from, you know, the flavor there, because, you know, the old saying, we are what we eat. If you have a fish that's down the bottom of the ocean and feeding on stuff that maybe other fish aren't eating because they're eating that fish, is that going to affect the flavor?
For some, maybe, but, you know, trash fish in my book doesn't always refer to the fish that the bottom feeders of the world, of the sea world, if you will. It refers to, from what I know, fish that have been discarded because it has little to no commercial value or market value. Mm-hmm. And that's something that needs to change, because some of these species are delicious. I mean, there's sashimi-grade delicious seafood that's being trashed. So the word trash to me is not that they're eating trashy foods themselves, and hence when we eat them, they're going to taste like what they eat, but it's rather that we're trashing them unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could talk to a little bit about the James Beard Foundation. I understand they're hosting a boot camp to talk about food sourcing policy and how that might sort of work into what we're talking about here about sustainable fishery.
Indeed. The James Beard Foundation and other institutions like them have been spearheading this notion of gathering chefs from around the world and the country to focus their energies on a number of things. And the boot camps of the JBF, one of which I was a part of in Louisville last year, is what really brought me into some local limelight, but beyond that, energized me to try to focus those things that I've always took for granted. You know, I've always been very thoughtful about what I've done, but never thought that people would care about my thoughtfulness. It was just something I thought you would do naturally. But learning more and more about how some things could be improved in our world, in our food world anyway, so the boot camps and events like that. For example, last night we had a tremendous event at the East End Market centered around just that in our region. And we have this movement now called GOFLA, and it stands for the Greater Orlando Food Leaders Alliance. And some of us got together in a boot camp style event in January at Lake Meadow Naturals. And the preeminent chefs of our region, the food writers, the producers, bloggers and some consumers as well are trying to think of ways to showcase the bounty of our region. And, of course, seafood is a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what's happening in the boot camp this time around, this year?
So the one that happened most recently, which Sheila, I think, can tell you more about, it was in California. Mm-hmm. And it was centered around seafood sustainability. And Kathleen Blake from Rusty Spoon, whom you know very well, was a member of this boot camp, and she's come back, you know, energized and trying to help us think through some ideas as they relate to sustainability of our seafood system. And I think Sheila is the best person to talk about how that boot camp went. And the future boot camps, from what I can tell, will have focused activities like that one. So the most recent one in California was about seafood sustainability. But you see, I don't think these events are very effective if they just stay focused and then you move on to another topic the next time around. It's a stream of consciousness and information that has to flow through our actions. And you can't say, this week we're going to talk about seafood and next week we're going to talk about how to have more grass-fed beef. Everything has to be sort of, you know seamlessly incorporated in how we behave and do things, I think.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, the boot camp, how'd it go?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Hari, that, you know, the folks over at James Beard are doing these kind of intensive sessions, and they're very experiential. So when the chefs came out to California, they were there in the center part of the state, and they did have an opportunity to go fishing, which means getting up at the crack of dawn, heading out there and throwing your hook in the water. And they weren't very successful. I think they caught one fish that was undersized that they had to throw back. And they, you know, realized their physical limitations with the seasickness aspect and really came back kind of understanding that catching fish is not an easy job. So maybe more appreciation for that task and how that works. But overall, I think in a world where chefs have to think about seafood and they have to think about their produce and they have to think about running their business and every aspect of what they're doing, I think these give nice connections to perhaps resources like Seafood Watch, where there's an easy set of recommendations that can start to fill in the blanks. Chefs don't have to be absolute experts on everything. They can start connecting with who's out there that can help them with all of these challenges.
I've been speaking to Sheila Bowman. She's the Manager for Culinary and Strategic Partnerships for the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch Program. Sheila, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Also speaking to Harry Pulapaka. He is the Executive Chef at Cress Restaurant in DeLand. Harry, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.